welcome to episode 5 of Shut Up and Ride. And I'm very excited. There's a lot of excitement going on in my head right now because we have our first guest to the pod. I'm joined, obviously, by the wonderful Simon Grieve, but we have the brilliant, talented. He is a top eventer. He is extraordinary. He also, for some reason, once upon a time, used to teach me how to stay on horses. It is the wonderful Tom Rowland. Welcome to the pod, Tom.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be the first ever guest.
First of all, I will let you know that this isn't like normal interviews. You said you've listened to podcasts that we've done already. You can be totally yourself. This is a safe place. This is a circle of trust, Tom. This is where we get to know the real Tom Rowland. Simon laughs at me a lot because I'm allowed to swear on this, which I find the most exciting thing.
When I first met her, I was really shocked by you swearing, like, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, gosh, because obviously you would never normally hear you swear. So,
wouldn't hear that on Rowland's Roundup, would you?
I think professional Jenny and friends Jenny are quite different people. But you two, before I start, you guys know each other. Am I correct? Obviously, eventing world, everyone knows each other, but you guys know each other. How well do you know each other? How in depth will this conversation be?
Well, I feel like everyone eventing knows Simon because he would, and I'm going to embarrass you now, always take time to chat to everyone. So he'd be a very available, if that makes sense. And it did make me laugh when you were talking, I'm not going to bring it up again, about going down Windsor 3-day event and there being someone that wasn't so chatty. But Simon would be one of the most chatty, outgoing riders there is. So everyone knows you, Simon.
Oh, thanks, Tom. That's brilliant. But we've known each other for a very long time and knew Tom when he was working for Angela. Were you working people then? Or were you?
Yeah.
He was working Angela people there, working hard. And I've seen how he has gradually, quietly worked his way up and been very clever about how he's done stuff and sourced some really, really good horses and focused on producing them in the right way and having an actual system and a plan to be able to have those horses at a good level. And you're currently in the process of it all coming to fruition and you've got a string of really great horses, which is so exciting.
Hopefully, but I think the same applies to you, Simon, in that without causing offence, neither of us were hugely prolific young riders or juniors winning loads of team medals. But actually, if you just keep chipping away and keep your head down and keep working hard and gradually building up a string, I'm sure you'd agree it's a sort of similar scenario for you in that respect.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And and the backing, we've had to kind of create ourselves, really, because it wasn't there in the first place. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was very privileged as a kid, but my parents weren't able to support me in the way that they needed to support me to be able to get really good horses, to be able to get there. So they kind of, and I think you're in the same bracket. Just take us back a bit, Tom. Where did it all start for you? Like, so give us a little bit of background. When you were a kid, when did you first start riding?
Well, so my parents are horsey in the sense that we used to go to Badminton every year, because we live in, my parents live in Tetbury, sort of 15, 20 minutes from Badminton. And so, you know, I was very lucky in that respect and they were very supportive. And I was in the local pony club and it sort of went on from there. Both my parents were both teachers, school teachers, and they said there was that kind of crossover period at about 16, 18 when you leave school. And I felt that I wasn't in a position to do uni and riding. I'd do them both badly. So you go and I gave my best shot to riding and sort of gave it sort of 4 or 5 years and thought, well, how's it going from there? And just gradually built up from there, really.
So can I tell the story of how I first met you, Tom?
Please do. Am I going to be embarrassed?
Horse trials?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I am going to be embarrassed.
So I was interviewing, it was a 3-star, I think, at Hartbury Horse Trials, and we had this call. I looked up the hill, see a rider galloping and a car coming through where ropes should have been and driving into a rider, seeing rider catapulted over the bonnet of a car, seeing horse actually was absolutely fine. The horse didn't even kind of, like, the horse got brushed off from the side and was, like, hit, but obviously didn't look like anything was broken. a woman comes in and starts battering driver of the car with a handbag, what it looked like, or the front of the car. Tom's already looking uncomfortable. And then we obviously found out that the event director in their car had hit Tom. The new event director at Heartbreak Horse Trials.
Oh, that's terrible.
So anyway, I then was like, shit. And then about 10 minutes later, I could see no one had even given Tom a lift back. So I then see Tom, who I'd never met before, walking across the field towards me. So I ran over and I had my microphone in my hand, but I had no interest in interviewing him. I was running over to A, see if he was okay, and B, see if I could get a car to drive him somewhere. And I walk up to him and the first thing he says to me is, please don't let the first time you interview me be for this.
Oh my God.
Well, that was the first time I met you, Tom. That
was solid. Yeah, not great. Not a great moment.
So, I mean, it was a good first introduction. I'm sorry, but it's looking back now, can you laugh? Are you like.
Yeah, I can definitely laugh, but for a long time and probably even now still, that would be like, you know, what? That was the first thing someone would say, oh, you're that guy that got run over, whose horse got run over. So it's taken a while to shake that one off, but if there was any horse to crash into with a car, it would be that one, because he was proper solid. And I think he did more damage to the car than the car did to him, but we were literally galloping at top speed. So it was quite dramatic. And I could suddenly see this car like coming across the side of my eyesight. And when you're going at like full speed, cause it was on the gallop middle of the course, there's not really much you can do. So not the finest moment.
And was it your mum who then went and hit the car and stuff?
Well, really bizarrely, my mum, who is like the most placid person in the world, was right there. And she was like, she literally wouldn't say boo to a goose. And she was pretty livid. And she was literally so weird, like the first person I saw. So yeah, not great. Not a great afternoon, that one.
No, not ideal.
It meant I got to meet you and I've loved you ever since. So, Tom Rowland, let's talk about badminton this year, because, I mean, the podcast can't go on for hours and we can talk about how wonderful your career has been to this date. But I think I would love to talk about badminton because I feel like we could talk about that for a long time. Have you come down from cloud nine? You came seventh. You took two horses there. Your round at badminton was fucking amazing. Can I just put it like that? I'm not allowed to say that at the end of a round at an interview. It was quite extraordinary. Can you take us through badminton? I'm sure Simon's got a bucket load of questions to ask you. But, I mean, I feel quite emotional. I was watching you from here. I screen grabbed so many shots and just shared them. Like, my instructor's cooler than your instructor. But, yeah, is that all now a distant memory? Or are you still reliving it in your head whilst having a bath? Galloping across that cross country.
Well, I'm sure Simon would agree that you're very quickly, i.e. literally the next day, onto the next event. So it already becomes a distant memory. And sometimes you're sort of randomly like hacking along and it's nice to recall it and it gives you confidence. But you are literally onto the next thing. And I was thinking that even today with those guys that just won a gold medal, they'll be at Aston Awards next week. And there are very few sports, aren't there, where you're immediately back to the daily grind. And I know that like Adam, because we're into the Olympics, I thought it was interesting because like Adam Peaty and Simone Biles, so the swimmer and the gymnast, both basically took 2 years off after Tokyo. Well, can you imagine one of the eventers doing that? You know, their work ethic is unbelievable, isn't it? You know, Tom and Laura and Ross will be back home with 15, 18 horses that, you know, they're not going to go and take 2 years off between after Paris and then kind of pick up again for LA. So it's a bit the same because you're always wanting to be keeping up with everyone else, aren't you?
So, Tom, you're saying that, like, so obviously you kind of ended up, you know, you're straight on to the next thing the next day. And, you know, are you saying that you haven't really absorbed it yet still? You know, we're a few months on.
I think you're always wanting to do better with your performance. So although it was really cool, you know, you're wanting to do better. So seventh was great, but actually no one remembers who was seventh. For me, it was a nice milestone. But, you know, I was very pleased, but you want to go on to the next. And you'd be the same, wouldn't you, Simon? You look at your result. And even now, going back to the Olympics again, I know Laura will be absolutely ecstatic to have won a gold medal and a bronze, but I'm sure she's also a little bit furious. As will Tom be for his mischange in the dressage that maybe cost him a gold medal. So I think everyone is pleased with that performance, but it's the nature of the beast to want to be doing better, isn't it?
What is it like then, both of you, I suppose, this question too, watching the Olympics, the guys have won gold. This is amazing. I asked Simon this question on the podcast before, Tom. Which would you rather, an Olympic gold medal or win a five-star?
I think it's got to be an Olympic gold medal because I think it's so transferable. Everyone universally knows what a gold medal is, don't they? And, you know, those guys, Tom and Laura, are now double Olympic gold medalists. That is insane. And when you look back, it's an interesting comparison to some of the people that Simon and I also grew up idolizing, like William, Fox, Pitt and Pippa. They never won a gold medal. And those two guys, you know, this generation's Pippa and William, and they've now got two double gold medals and a career that could probably go on for another 20 years. So I think, and they deserve as well, don't they? Paris and Versailles was unbelievable, wasn't it, to watch, and the crowds and everything. Tokyo, obviously we weren't there, but it must be extra special to go and win that gold in front of so many people in a very different environment and atmosphere to 4 or 3 years ago.
So I answered differently to that, didn't I? I said that I'd rather win a five-star, but I completely know, I get what you, the point, the strongest point you made there was that it's transferable. Like you, if you were at a party somewhere and you met some people that weren't horsey at all and you said, oh, I've won badminton 5 times, they'd be like, what the hell's that? But if you said, oh, I'm a double Olympic champion, they're like, oh my God, wow, that's amazing. So completely get that. But I still think that I would rather win a five-star because I think that it's that bit much more of a challenge. Don't get me wrong, obviously winning an Olympics is a massive challenge, but like five-star is like the absolute pinnacle of our sport.
Two things I want to talk about, one being Chris Burton and that horse and that kind of scenario, which blows my mind a little bit. But firstly, I want to talk about the Japanese riders. I mean, like, they've kind of... It's almost like they've said, right, this is a goal. We are going to become good at eventing. And they got a bloody bronze medal. And I know they've gone and bought Grafton Street, like Pippa's horse, and they've had William training. And honestly, like, they are just lovely guys. But I just absolutely, like, take my hat off to them because they have worked so unbelievably hard. And to pull off a bronze medal, I'm just like, I loved it. I was cheering them on all the way.
Well, Tom will know, like, when the Japanese guys came over and they based themselves over here with Angela at her base and she started training them, I mean, it wasn't great. Like, you know, the standard was not fantastic. They had all the support they could possibly need, but the experience and the knowledge wasn't there yet. And they have... God, how long ago would that be now, Tom? It's a long time, isn't it? Like 15 years? And they have worked and worked, isn't it?
And it's so nice for, you know, we mentioned earlier Simon and I, Angela Tucker and Matt Glentworth and that whole team, and that the Japanese riders have been a part of the UK circuit for a long, long time, and they nearly pulled off an individual medal with Kazuma in Tokyo. I think he finished fourth at their home Olympics.
Yeah.
So to go and win the individual bronze, the team bronze this time, I don't think that there'll be a single nation or a single rider that doesn't think that's a really well-deserved result for what has been 12, 14 years of hard work. And also, yeah, I think I'm allowed to say, I don't think it's a hidden secret, but I believe that it now Paris is pretty much the end of their funding run from their national federations and from the two or three big Japanese backers. So hopefully they'll all change their mind. But my understanding is they've all got families at home. And you know, it was going to finish after Tokyo, but because there was only 3 years then, they kept going for three more years with the horse they've got. But I don't think, you know, saying something I shouldn't, those horses are going back to Japan and the riders are as well. So what a perfect, you know, finale for them, really.
They've sacrificed so much and given so much to be able to have the success. I think out of everybody, they deserve it more than anyone. I just think it's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, as you say, the support network that they've had, Matt Bentworth and Angela and all of those guys have been absolutely fantastic and done the most incredible job of getting them to where they are. So you see celebration required there, I think.
And I've interviewed Kazu. He did really well at Blenheim a few years ago. I interviewed him and he was just so great and he was just so lovely. And then I was down at William Fox Pitts Yard like a year later, hadn't seen the guy, and he just ran over and gave me a massive hug. And I was like, he's just the nicest guy. And I know that he has left family behind. He has been living with the Fox Pits. Yeah. Like, he hasn't seen his family. Sacrifices. He's the only one I know personally that chap has made. And I know, hats off to Alice and William. They have embraced him as part of their family. And I know they're so proud of him. But I mean, he's just like, honestly, it's emotional thinking about it, because to give up your family and your life as well as having to work that hard and then to see a medal at the end of it. I just hope that somehow they can make it work, that he can keep eventing and have his family. Because at the moment, it doesn't seem that he can do both. And I just think there's a story somewhere. Maybe we can get him on the pod. But yeah, like, well done to the Japanese riders. Absolutely incredible story.
And can we stay on the Japanese for a minute as well? Because absolutely taking nothing away from their performance. Simon and I would be pretty good eventing geeks, but I cannot get my head around this Olympic format. So the Japanese, very sadly, one of their riders withdrew from the holding box this morning. But by withdrawing and not being eliminated, they were able to substitute in their other rider. So rather than having a 200 penalty advantage, it was only a 20 penalty disadvantage. So by playing that tactical game of withdrawing rather than being eliminated, they were able to still win bronze. But I don't want to say anything negative about horse sport in the Olympics, especially as I think we're treading a fine line. So I think we've got to be positive. But it's been the most confusing 3 days trying to keep up with all the different rules and the substitutions and everything. It's a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, it's completely. Definitely not straightforward that now. Like, it's not, well, it wasn't straightforward before. So now it's even more complicated for anybody looking in.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the same with the dressage, isn't it? They can substitute someone at some point. I'm a journalist and I don't really understand the rules behind it. And the same in the show jumping. Not only do these guys have to travel as reserves ready to be subbed in, like in the old days, wasn't it? You could just be subbed in at the beginning and that's it. You have to be ready to ride down that center line or jump that jump at any point in the competition. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because Yaz Ingham even trotted up today. So she was even in theory ready to be substituted in to show jump on her fresh, you know, Banzai who hasn't gone cross country at any moment. And that does seem like a pretty horrific position to be in, even more so than your traditional travelling reserve, who at least once the competition was started, could maybe move on with the rest of the week.
Whereas they're sort of actually just relax.
Yeah.
Could start drinking, be in the crowd, having a drink.
And at Tokyo, that was Paul Ross who was doing that on All-Star B. And because the cross country wasn't on site, so that will quite often happen at Olympics, they had to be boxed down the road. Her horse, All-Star B, was even transported to the cross country venue in case suddenly he was needed because one of them didn't travel well. So,
do you know what is it with our country? If you become world champion, does that make you immediately reserve for the Olympics? Is that how it works with us?
It would seem like it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but that's it. For the two Olympics running, our world champion has been our reserve. What the fuck is that about? We just got a shot of Simon's arse. I very much enjoyed that. Thank you, Simon.
Sorry.
But you are a bit of an eventing geek, aren't you, Tom? You do like to follow it, like... Another rider I wanted to touch on at the Olympics, because I mean, I'm still like basking in the glory of our gold medal, but Chris Burton, silver medal, shadow man, who until what, few months ago, Hobday's horse, he's produced him. I mean, for Ben, that must be such a double-edged sword. Unbelievable that he obviously saw, I don't know what conversations went on behind closed door, but he knew that the horse was so talented and could forego the ride himself because he wasn't going to get selected. But I mean, you guys as competitors, I am a mere super fan in this. What on earth must have gone on there? And secondly, how do you as a rider even do that in your head and watch it and be happy and sad? Tom, you probably know more of the ins and outs of it than I do, but I mean, and so good that the horse got a medal.
I think it was absolutely amazing. And don't forget that because Chris has been show jumping to such a high level, that obviously has kept his eye in. You know, he nearly got selected for the show jumping team as well. But it's still very impressive. They used to say he was the fastest man in the world cross country. To me, it's still very impressive to be able to, yes, he's probably doing jump offs, but to be able to travel at speed cross country and do the dressage. And I think because the horse has had a bit of time off, that he's been run very conservatively this year as well. I don't know the exact statistics, but I reckon Chris has probably only run that horse five times, maybe six times this season. So it's not even like, you know, he's been running week in, week out on a huge string of horses. He's had one other horse as well. So it's impressive on so many levels. He's been busy doing his show jumping string as well still. You know, I think he was listed as a reserve. So it's unbelievable if you follow them on Instagram, the logistics of two international competition teams that they're running.
And the other thing that I think is really impressive is Ben in all of this, like how he has conducted himself and how supportive he's been. And I just think he's dealt with it really, really well. And I think a lot of us would have struggled to be how he's been with the whole thing. Because, you know, you'd be pretty jealous, wouldn't you? Like, you know, somebody taking yours that you produced, you put all the work into to go in that. But he's turned it around and taken the kind of positives out of it and is very, very happy for Chris. And he was out there, wasn't he? You know, being supportive. And I think all credit to him for being, he's such a fabulous job on the horse, but also for being so supportive of the whole thing.
And also, I know, you know, the whole point of this podcast is to speak openly. So here you go, here's something. Absolutely, Simon. Also, money. You know, thankfully, he's been rewarded heavily financially. And I know that's like a hush-hush thing that we shouldn't mention, but here you go. We can discuss it on this podcast now then. You know, Ben is running a business and quite rightly has made, well, I hope, a lot of money out of the arrangement as well. And he's acted in a very, very clever business and personal sense, and yeah, you know, it's worked out hopefully everyone, and absolutely fair play to Ben on so many levels for doing that, because
yeah, he's been shrewd and honorable in the same breath, which is fairly unusual.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to start off with the fact that a lot of people listening to this won't necessarily be kind of inventing knowledge as knowledgeable as yourself, but they will know who Pammy Hutton is. And you do ride a horse for Pammy Hutton. First of all, how terrifying is that? And tell us a little bit about that relationship, because most people know Pammy as this fierce dragon. So would love a lesson, but wouldn't necessarily want to maybe have the pressure of riding a horse for her. Can you take us through that relationship? Is she, I know her personally, and I bang on about how wonderful she is, but what is your relationship with Pammy? And tell us a little bit about that, because she's brilliant, isn't she?
Yeah, well, it started out because she's my neighbour. So that's very handy. It's literally a 5-minute hack from our property where I rent to their property. And the best thing you can do with Pammy, she is terrifying, but you take the mick out of her. And then she doesn't know what to do, and then that softens her. And we've got a group chat between myself, Pammy, and several of the students who are involved in Pammy's event. She's also got a very nice 5-year-old as well that's qualified for the Burley 5-year-old championships. And that's why I love Talon, because actually you'll agree, Jenny, Pammy's actually very, very generous. And not only does she produce horses, but she produces riders as well. And so there's a really nice group of us on a fun group chat. And that is a nice sort of starting point for the working relationship. And it's gone on from there, really.
Keep banging on to Simon that he needs to go. When you had a horse that wasn't changing, I think, behind or something, Simon, I was like, you got to go and see Pammy. You got to go get down there. She's the queen of the flying changes.
Yes. Yeah, she is. And actually, riding Ebony, her horse, is fantastic. But I have to be a bit careful because she's really good at her tempi changes. And so I have to be really careful because all she wants to do is these massive, great big flying changes. And I've taken her back down. We took her back down to 3-star this spring to go and do a 3-star long, because we sort of decided that actually we might like to go and do a 4-star long. But to do that, we had to go and do a 3-star. And simple changes on that colored mare, she hates them. All she wants to do is a flying change. And normally I'd be riding a flying change on mine, so I'm like, wait, 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 wait. Whereas on her, you just gallop across, floor her down the diagonal, swing your leg back, and she just puts in these amazing changes. So yeah, that's thanks to Pammy producing them.
And then this is gonna
lucky
bring
a boy.
What was that, Simon?
I said, you lucky boy.
Yeah, it's really hard. Really fun.
This is going to bring me round to your Instagram post about Ebony, which is then a way of leading on to the current climate in the world. Because I'm guessing your post about Ebony is in response to what's been happening in the world at the moment. But you posted a picture of Ebony and just her ears. And I said this to Simon when I saw Sarah Ennis's box come out of the start box at the Olympics. That horse that Sarah rides just wanted to go. I mean, those ears were so pricked. And I feel the same with Ebony. If anyone questions if a horse loves their job and loves doing this sport, they just have to watch Ebony go round cross country. And I feel like she could be such an advocate, and you're such an advocate, because obviously you posted that after what's been going on with Charlotte coming out. And there will be a lot of people in the world questioning if horses even enjoy being ridden. And I think Ebony is the perfect horse to prove that actually they do. Am I right in thinking that, Tom?
Yeah, I think you are. And to be totally honest, neither Pammy or myself expected her to necessarily go as far as she has, and hopefully she'll continue to do so. And that is simply because you get these amazing horses that absolutely love it. And the majority, well, I think all top horses, they do it because they love, you know, you. It's that old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. They absolutely, I believe, do love their job. And she sums that up. And she makes me laugh, because genuinely, I have not seen a picture of her without her ears being like fully pricked. She absolutely loves it. And that, to be honest, that can be tricky, because I get her to an event and she hears tannoy and she, you know, it can be tricky to make her settle for a dressage test. But it's very satisfying to, when you're riding a horse that you feel is really enjoying and loving what you're asking them to do.
What is your opinion or take, or do you want to have your say on what has happened recently with Charlotte? Me and Simon have spoken about it in depth with Ben, but with the way the world is going, are you worried about it? Is it stressed you out? Are you? What is your feeling, if you don't mind sharing with them, what's been happening recently?
Well, I think it's, you have to be, it's nerve-wracking to say anything, isn't it? But I do think that, and this is of no defence, but we live in such a cancel culture world that I believe Charlotte has achieved an awful lot of good. And when you look at Vallegro and all those horses again, Vallegro absolutely loved his job. The way he would be on full power, you drop the reins and he would walk up the arena. And he and Charlotte had an amazing partnership, rightly or wrongly, through what I would hope is an isolated incident. And I could be wrong there, but it only takes a minute or 30 seconds to undo an extraordinary career. And that is a sad thing, isn't it? I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, but it's very, very sad. But for someone to go from hero to zero in such a dramatic downfall is a very sad thing to see. So I feel very, very sad by the whole thing.
It's a hard one, because it gets me really upset, the whole thing. I don't know what to say about it.
It is like that, isn't it? Because you can't. It's so hard to discuss it, because at no point do any of us want to condone it in any way, shape or form. But there is the human, she's still a human, and we know she is being literally torn apart. And so you're not an awful person, Simon. So the reason you don't know what to say is because you are not a person who's going to slag someone off, and at the because you feel for her as well as the horse.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, what she did was massively wrong.
Yeah, and yeah. It's pretty catastrophic for equestrianism as a whole, isn't it? I mean, there actually really could not have been more worse thing to happen a week before the Olympics. You know, Charlotte is dressage, isn't she? And rightly so, I think people also feel very angry that hasn't been respected, the responsibility she holds. And it's scary when you look at the non-equestrian comments, you know, on websites and on online newspapers. Overwhelmingly, I'd say 90% of the comments are, why is that still in the Olympics? Why are people still riding horses? And it does make you think, what is our future? And so I think everyone has to work really, really hard to ensure there is a future, because I don't think it's a dramatic thing to say that things are very delicate right now.
And we are terrible as a community, the equestrian community. We are terrible with change. We can't stand change. We like to stick in the old way of doing things. There are very few people, and Tom, you're actually one of them, that actually thinks outside the box. And, you know, like Caroline Moore is another, like, as a coach, she's very good at thinking outside the box, doing something new, doing something different. But as a general rule, and I'm one of them, horsey people are terrible with change. But we need to change, and we need to change pretty fucking quickly, because if we don't, then we're going to lose it. And I think it is as serious as that. I sound like I'm being very dramatic, but I think that is very true. I've been saying it for a long time that equestrianism is on a knife edge. And this has just accelerated that. And I think we need to change, and we need to change pretty, pretty quickly.
Rightly or wrongly, a lot of top riders are competitors. And there's an interesting conflict between sometimes being a horseman and being a competitor. And I think that's a moment of knowing how far do you push a horse. And I think from our perspective in 3-day eventing, you get far more praise if you put your hand, rightly so, if you put your hand up and retire on your tired horse and give it a pat, then think, I'm 9 minutes into the course, I've only got 2 minutes left, I've only got 5 minutes more, I'm pretty sure I can get this horse home. You know, that realistically is no longer the attitude to have. And I think we have to be mindful that we are competitive, but we have a responsibility to our horses.
And I think we have to just remember that even though it is a sport and you guys are professionals, there is also all of us mere mortals who just want to love horses and want to be able to do it forever and look up to you guys. And there is a duty of care to that little person who wants to ride Lady Sparkles at the weekend because that's all they live for. And I think that is, and I think if any rider is done fucked up, sat down and spoke about it, they would know this is true as well. And yeah, because medals and money and everything is on the table, you forget that's why you do it, because you love horses. Sorry, that wasn't a very eloquent way of saying it, but I think you know what I mean.
Definitely.
We need Ben back on. Ben is the most eloquent person. So Ben, who does our podcast, who Tom was very much looking forward to meeting, but we swapped him in for Simon because we're talking all things eventing. It turns out, Tom Rowland, that Ben Atkinson is one of the most eloquent people when it comes to explaining stuff that Simon and I have ever met, isn't he? He's just not only an extraordinary horseman, he puts us to shame. On a lighter note, he is very good at being eloquent, and he's normally the one who puts me and Simon back in our boxes and says it all the way we're thinking.
And also, like you say, I'm still feeling deep about it all, because it's a dark time, but it's people like him that are needed in the equestrian community, in the equestrian world. Totally.
That's exactly what we said, isn't it, Simon? And I'm hoping that maybe the best of all the worlds can start coming together and working together, like the best bits of everything. The horses that love the sport and want to gallop and jump shit, but maybe if they're a bit tricky, we turn to Ben. How do we train this better? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like working together in the best way possible. So let's move away, because we all love horses. What is in the plans for Tom Rowland eventing after you are so amazing? Did you find after badminton? Because obviously badminton is a platform where people who are the diehard eventers, they know who you guys are. But it is the badmintons and burleys that really elevate your careers and put you in the limelight to the people who only follow badminton when it's 5 stars. Did you find that after competing at 5 stars, Tom, putting yourself out there, whatever the result, that your following increased, more people knew who you were? Would you say that was correct, that it's the 5 stars that really kind of push you guys into the line?
Yeah, and I actually thought it was interesting, because you sort of think, you know, you're eventing, I'm eventing pretty much every weekend, but that is sort of somehow irrelevant, if that makes sense. People do seem to, in a good way, you know, really want to concentrate on the badminton and the burleys. And it was actually, I think, Mark Phillips who also put the horse in hand. He said how well those events have managed to sustain the interest. You've almost got a sport going in 2 different directions. We mentioned it before. Yes, we love the Olympics, but actually the badmintons and the burleys are still absolutely thriving in their own right. And they still, people still seem to have a lot of interest in them, which is fantastic, because that's really important for our sport. But yeah, people still, the general public do seem to still have a thirst and desire to want to go and watch and support.
Do you not shit your pants though when that many people come to watch you, or do you love it? And same question to you after Tom, Simon.
I honestly think that it's all led up to this. So all this time, all those moments, like that you've been on the gallops and you've done the, you know, Simon knows what the hard work is. It's all come up to that moment, hasn't it? So you've just got to make the most of it. And there is a really cheesy saying, and it's a Chris Barter saying, but I honestly love it, which is it's no disgrace to fail courageously. So go out and give it your best shot. And all those best riders have had shit days and fallen off, and you forget that. How many times have those great people fallen off the Bamerton or Burley, but they come back for more? So it might not be your day, but go out and give it your best shot and see how it goes. And obviously, you know, make sure you look after your horse the best you can. But I aspire to be those people that just keep coming back for more time and time again. Because I think if you put yourself in a good position, eventually it hopefully becomes
good
your day.
Good answer, Tom. Like it.
What about you,
Very
Simon?
Good.
Is he good at his answers, yeah, isn't he? He's putting you to shame, Simon.
Yeah.
Simon's like, I was throwing up in my lorry 2 minutes before. Fuck the clouds. I do want to talk about is your training ethos, Tom, because we've got Ben, who's our partner on the pod, who is brilliant at stories and articulating things. But you, Tom Rowland, are great at an analogy. When you train, you always manage to put your training into some kind of context, whether it's me like taking off like an aeroplane or like when you ride a turn, you've always got something to say. What would you say to me if I've got to feel like I'm taking off like an aeroplane or something you said to me once?
Yeah, like the horse has got to be uphill coming into a fence. They've got to be sat on their hind end like an aeroplane preparing to take off. There you go.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah,
I know, right? Like, have you got a list of favourite ones, or do they just come to you as you're teaching? Because this is what I've always wondered, but I've always been sat on Maddie, who's probably trying to kill me as I'm having my lesson. But you do have, like, a black book of analogies you love to use.
Well, the guys and the girls on the yard, my arena is very, very close to the stables, so they do normally, I'm quite loud, so they do normally hear what I'm saying, and they're always taking the mick out of me, because the one I always say is, coil the spring. So like you've got to use your leg to bring the hind underneath and then kind of connect it in front. So like, especially during a shouldering round, like kind of coil the spring, recoil the spring. And so I'm always saying that.
That's a really good one.
So now I feel really, really good one. When I say that one. But, yeah. It's a good one, isn't it? Coil the spring, ready to release at the fence. Done. Easy.
Wow. I need to get a camera just when you're teaching your lessons and put like some kind of fun thing together where I just have all your analogy, because you have so many of them. You have so many.
Well, the other one I love is a Lucinda Green one. And I know we all have a mutual love for Lucinda. And that one is plug yourself in like an electrical socket. And that's pretty cool, isn't it? Like, you know, I feel like that can be translated to anyone.
Some people say, oh, plug your bottom. Which just doesn't sit very well with me when I'm teaching. I can't shout that at somebody when I'm teaching. Plug your bottom. Definitely a no-go. Plug your bottom into an electrical socket.
Yeah, we should have a moment for an appreciation to Lucinda Green. Oh, my God. Yeah. This is taking a turn.
Now Simon's ruined it. Now I'm never, ever going to be upset. You've basically corrupted Lucinda Green's entire, like...
Oh, my God. I love that woman. I love her so... She's just... Yeah, possibly.
I love her, but she has a wicked... Can I tell you a Lucinda Green story before we go quickly? So, yeah. I love Lucinda, and I idolise her. Even, like, I've known her how long now. She's now a friend. It? Whenever I meet her, I still get that. I'm talking to Lucinda Green. There is a but. So, when I was pregnant with my second child, Delilah... She was in Africa. You know, she goes on these horse safaris where she helps organise it and then she's on them and she has a great time. She's always invited me on them. I'm like, no, Lucinda, I haven't got any money. Fuck off. Anyway, so she was on safari and she kept sending me messages going, it's so lovely you're here with us, Jenny. It's so lovely. And because it's like different time zone, I'd get these messages at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd be like, she's finally, like anyone who knows Lucinda knows she's completely barking. But I was like, she's finally lost it. She's finally lost the plot. This is it. So I need to send someone to Africa to go save her. She's lost it. So then one message, she sent me a picture of like the savannah. And again, was like, I'm just so glad you're here. It's so lovely you're here. I'm like, Jesus, I'm going to give birth. She is winding me up. Like, what is going on? Anyway, I zoomed into this picture and there was a picture of a hippo in the middle.
Oh my God, she's even better.
It's like, you witch. Then he said, you're an absolute cowbag. I can't believe you're slagging me and calling me a hippo. And she said, don't worry, karma got its revenge. And she sent me a picture of her and she'd sat on one of those canvas chairs and it had ripped and she was stuck in a canvas chair, but she still had her glass of wine. And I was like, excellent. Thank you very much. But she is brilliant.
She's absolutely brilliant as like a trainer, but she's also incredibly kind. She's such a lovely person with it. Like, I remember doing the 4-star event somewhere and I went really well and she made a concerted effort to come and find me in the stables. Because I don't know her that well enough, but she came and made a concerted effort to come and find me and she's like, I watched you through this combination. My God, didn't you ride well? That's absolutely amazing. Well done, you. And that's always lovely to hear from Lucinda. But then another big event somewhere didn't go very well for me, and she again made a concerted effort to come and find me in the stables to offer her help, not in a condescending way either, like in a, oh my God, I felt so sorry for you because I thought you were doing a really good job, and then that way, but so is there any way that I can help? And she's just wonderful. I love that woman.
And also, going back to the conversation of earlier, she is a proper horsewoman and she really gets horses. And if you actually talk to her with any horse about what the horse is thinking, and how they're feeling, that she, when you, in some ways, has been years ahead because she's been doing that her whole life. She's very good. Yeah, totally, totally.
Her ethos is, if you don't explain what the question is, the horse can't give you the answer.
It's actually literally the perfect way of summarising it off, isn't it? I mean, if there's one saying, it would literally be that one. Can you say it again so that we can all absorb it?
If the horse doesn't know what the question is, they can't give you an answer.
This literally sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah. And that's why I when I'm training, and obviously I'm nothing like you guys, but I've learned so much from both of you, having had lessons with both of you, but again, Lucinda being the god. And people say, oh, my horse is ditchy. No horse is ditchy. They just don't understand what a ditch is. And when I love Lucinda. She's like, show them the fence. Show them what the question is. Show them. We all spend our lives people spend their lives spending their horses and just kicking them. And like, you teach them what the question is and they'll always give you an answer. And I think she is, like you say, she streaks ahead of her time and just an all-round utter legend. And if we all rang her now and said, asked her for her help solving a problem, she would pick up the phone and give you 10 hours.
Yeah, totally.
So with that, Tom, with your training, I just love how you don't put horses in a box. You think of, like, you always say, like, what is it that they need help with? And you work out a way. Oh, this didn't work. Let's find something else. But if you were to have someone watch you train, what is it that you hope they would take away from how you are with your horses? Like, if you were someone to watch a snapshot in Tom's life, what is it that you kind of, what's your ethos? What is it that you hope people take away from how you are and your lessons? I know, because I've had lessons with you.
This was your...
Well, thank you.
Well, I think the big thing is probably harder to show immediately, but it's actually a partnership. I really believe in that. You know, the majority of people have had their horses from a very early age, and which is what makes what Chris Burton's just done so impressive. But I always tend to think of my horses a bit like humans, like they give them human characteristics, and sometimes compare them to other horses, like famous horses. But I genuinely believe if your horse likes you, then they're going to be happy and they're going to help you out as well. And ultimately, when we're taking a horse cross country, they've got to want to do it. They've got to want to help you out. And I think it's keeping it varied, having fun, making sure, like you sort of said, like they understand the questions you're asking, and just building them up slowly, like not over facing a horse, because I do think it can take a long time to build confidence and it's very easy for a horse to lose it. But if I had to summarize, it would be a partnership. And I think if you've got that, then you can go a long way together.
You're nodding away, Simon, though.
You're
that. Nodding away, having a smile.
I think if you can keep your partnership with your horse and your trust, then hopefully you're going to be on a good journey.
And I think, like, exactly that. Like, you can't always snapshot that in a training session. but it is, that is exactly what it is. It's that partnership. And watching the Olympics last night across country, the commentator, I'm not going to say who it is, you're doing 4 hours of commentary, it's very hard. But the terminology that he used at one point was, this horse has been such a good servant to them. And that made me really cross, because they're not servants, yeah, they're friends.
Yeah. It's
and I
really
know it's just terminology.
Expression.
It's a really, and it's an old-fashioned phrase, but I think we need to change that narrative in every level of our sport. Commentary, say what the horse's stable names are, say what they like, treats they like. They are our friends, they are our partners, they are definitely not servants. And when I heard that line, I know they said it after four hours of commentary and it was just a phrase, but I think we need to start thinking in our mindset at the top level of the sport.
But Laura mentioned
like
that, you know, in
I
her
know
interview,
you would never
say she said, oh my God, this was the most amazing experience of my life, galloping around Versailles at the Olympics with my best friend. That's enough for me. That's perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, good girl. Love. Oh God, yeah, no, she definitely meant it.
Yeah, and she meant it. She wasn't saying that as a PR stunt. Right.
Yeah. And it's amazing when you change that, isn't it?
So, Tom, I'm loving chatting to you. I love your honesty. I love the fact that there's nothing you wouldn't say. But where are you going now for the rest of the year? What is your plans? And I apologise deeply that Ben Atkinson wasn't here to interview you with his top off. I know that was something you were hoping for.
I think he's going to Horse of the Year show or Olympia or something and watch Ben. But
Burley, don't worry. When we get 1,000 followers, he's going to take his top off. So, okay.
Simon.
Apparently so.
Okay. Is that what he said?
That's what he said. We're just going to keep it like that.
And what's Simon going to do? What's Simon going to do?
What's
Simon's agreement? 1,000 followers.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep his top on.
I love you, Denny.
I think we should get a tour of his lorry lift. A tour of his living in his lorry, which he's sort of like giving us all.
You don't want to look down here. It's a mess.
So basically, the message from this is, unless you start sharing and get us 1,000 followers on Instagram, Simon's going to take his top off and Ben will keep his top on. So get sharing, people. Get sharing.
Oh, dear. I'm taking my trousers down now.
Good. Right. On that note, Tom, thank you so much for being our first guest on the pod. It's been wonderful speaking to you. And I'm just so grateful it's been you that's been able to come on here, because, like I say, it's a real mix of emotions of like the best moment in eventing ever to one of the darkest weeks in our sport. And I think you've been the perfect person to bring the two worlds together in such a thank you for coming on. Have you enjoyed it? Hasn't been too terrifying, apart from a few Wi-Fi issues.
And I'm going to sound like I'm really kind of like trying to like suck up to you guys, but I'm really looking forward to listening to your podcast. Like, it's cool to have another one out there with a different, you know, with a sort of relaxed chat, and looking forward to
good to have
it being a regular thing. So thanks, guys.
Well, and we hope you'll come back on. Maybe you could do us one live from Burley. We'd very much love something like that. Keep up with us during your season.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
Which sort of personal, and maybe I should ask off air, but we can hold you to it on air, which is, are you ever going to come back to the UK? I feel like you've fallen in love with Canada and it's never going to happen.
I don't know. I'm missing riding. I haven't got horses here.
Can you not have a horse?
Not here, not to ride. I live in the mountains quite far away from lots of horses. I have to drive an hour to go and work at Thunderbird in Langley. And it's always a bit awkward, isn't it? Loads of people have offered me rides, but I always feel a bit awkward going, oh, can I come and ride your horse? So the thing that will bring me back is the missing being on my ponies. But at the moment, I'm enjoying hiking and the mountains and the Canadian way of life. It's very chilled and outdoorsy. And for my children, say that again.
I was about to say, it looks like a good place to be bringing up kids.
Yes. And it's just very outdoorsy and lovely and chilled, and there's a vibe. So at the moment, that's where we're going. But yeah, I'm never say never. I don't know is the answer, Tom. I don't know. I do miss my lessons.
You'd
with
come
you,
back,
though.
Jenny. You'd come back.
You're still my instructor. I do say it when you were going around Babington. I was like, my instructor's cool. My instructor's amazing. You're still my instructor, Tom.
Thank you. I'm just wanting some Kristen back. That was the only reason I was asking.
You just want some love. A podcast hug sent your way. Right. Well, all that is left, Tom Rowland, our first podcast guest on Shut Up and Ride, is to say, shut up and ride.